Hey guys, welcome back to our Ask Halk segment. This week we're welcoming Dean Alonistiotis, one of our most active members, to our headquarters here in Chicago. Dean, tell us a little bit about yourself and your Halk involvement.
Sure. Thank you very much, Dano, for the opportunity to be on Ask Halk. Excited to be here, actually, because I've been a part of Halk from the beginning and passionate advocate towards Hellenic issues and issues that Halk works on a day-to-day basis. I'm passionate about the work, especially particularly in religious freedom, given my involvement. I serve as vice president of my parish here in Chicago, Annunciation Cathedral, and I'm interested the continued advocacy work you guys do around religious freedom. So I'm excited to be here today.
Awesome. Yeah. And we're privileged as well to welcome Dr. Elizabeth Prodromou back on the Greek Current, who is not only a professor at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, but has also served on the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom and has led on issues of religious freedom and the ecumenical patriarchate like no one else in this community. So thank you, Dr. Prodromou, for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's great to be talking to both of you.
So one of the benefits of being a Halk member is access. Not only do we make ourselves the staff available to our members, but as our members like Dean are seeing right now in this Ask Halk segment and in other events that we've done, we give them access to experts and thought leaders such as yourself, Dr. Prodromou. So with that in mind, I want to tee off the questioning for Dean to start off the conversation.
Sure. Thank you very much, Dr. Prodromou, to join us today. My first question is, over the years, we've seen the state of religious freedom on Turkey worsen. The Halki Theological Seminary remains closed now for over 40 years, and there are serious concerns regarding the future state of Hagia Sophia. There is even a report that indicates that while the talks to reopen Halki are going nowhere, Turkey is planning to build a colossal Islamic center on the same island. What do these facts say about the reality of religious freedom in Turkey today?
Thanks for this great question and for focusing on what's happening with religious freedom in Turkey. I think it's fair to say that overall the religious freedom conditions in the country are continue to worsen, unfortunately, precipitously. The trend lines are going in the wrong direction. There's been a lot of press in the last several weeks, even months, about the imprisonment, long-term detention of U.S. pastor Andrew Brunson. And I think in many ways, his case has really shed a spotlight on what we as Orthodox Christians have known for a long time, which is that the ability to believe, act, and worship freely in Turkey for certainly for non-Sunni Muslims in the country, but even for Sunni Muslims has been problematic. You mentioned the Halki Theological Seminary and the announcement recently to open the Islamic Center on the island of Halki. I think that's another red flag about trend lines going in the wrong place. More generally, that announcement and what we're seeing is part of what I think we can call a steady and very deliberate Islamization policy pursued by the Erdogan government. And the Erdogan government announced that actually the Secretary General of the Department of Religious Affairs, the Diyanet, announced that there's going to be a new Center of Islamic Studies. It's going to be about 200 acres large that's going to be built on the island of Halki. The location on the island, as well as its location very nearby to the Halki Theological School, I think is both symbolic and sends a very strong and negative message about religious freedom. 200-acre site, approximately a kilometer away from the Halki Theological School, that new site will have dorms that will house students and scholars from abroad. It is intended as a new kind of messaging of the Erdogan government that if you want to study and learn about Islam, you should come to Turkey, which is a kind of, you know, neo-Ottoman place where people can learn about global Islam. There's been pushback actually from residents of the island and more generally in Turkey about this announcement. Concerns about what that center implies for the religious demography and the overall kind of political climate in Turkey. So this recent announcement, I think, is just symbolic, along with Pastor Andrew Brunson's case of, you know, religious freedom conditions declining precipitously in the country.
Thank you. You mentioned Pastor Brunson's continued detainment. What does that advocacy mean for the Patriarchate? And can you reflect on some of your thoughts from the July International Religious Freedom Ministerial Meeting that occurred? And in that frame, we saw significant U.S. advocacy to get Pastor Brunson freed and sent back here to the United States. What does that all mean? And, you know, how does it impact the Patriarchate directly or indirectly for that case?
Well, the Brunson, so you mentioned the ministerial that was held by the International Religious Freedom Office at the State Department. A new ambassador was confirmed earlier in 2018, Ambassador Sam Brownback, who has made the religious freedom plank in the State Department. He is very, very committed to expanding the footprint, let's put it that way, of religious freedom activities within his office as part of the State Department as a whole. So this ministerial that was held in July was a first-time ministerial, and what it did is it brought together religious freedom representatives from around the world. They were convened through the IRF, the International Religious Freedom Office, to discuss needs, priorities, and concerns when it comes to religious freedom, and more specifically, to develop open dialogue, conversation, and capacity to work actively with the State Department's IRF office. And that's, I would say, a very good thing for the, you know, the Patriarchate. So going from 10,000 feet down to the, you know, the focus on the Patriarchate, because it means that, you know, that office is, the doors are open. There's a recognition, and they've been very careful under Sam Brownback, Ambassador Brownback, to you know, declare this. They've been very deliberate that there's a recognition of the linkage between religious freedom on the one hand and stable, robust security environments on the other. So that's, again, something I think that's important for the Patriarchate, because the condition of the Ecumenical Patriarchate, as that condition has worsened, we have seen the overall security climate in Turkey worsen. I mean, I think it's fair to say that since the coup attempt in 2016 in Turkey, that Turkey is now at least an authoritarian state. I would say that it's an authoritarian state with Stalinesque features. You know, there is a party state, there is a president with absolute authority, and the massive violations of civil and political liberties that we've seen in the last 2 years are what lead me to call it, characterize it as a kind of Stalinesque regime. And so I think going back to the ministerial and the Patriarchate, then the decline in the political climate in Turkey and the decline in the conditions for the Patriarchate and religious freedom more broadly, those have been, there's been a correlation there. And so the State Department IRF office, I think, is very much open to understanding those linkages and placing the situation and condition of the Patriarchate within that broader context of U.S. foreign policy efforts to perhaps, you know, encourage, find ways to encourage Turkey to do a U-turn away from its, you know, ongoing authoritarianism.
So as a follow-up, how has the highlight that's been put on Pastor Brunson by this administration impacted advocacy for the Patriarchate? And is it helping, or should Pastor Brunson be released in the near future? Will people kind of stop discussing the Patriarchate in the public sphere?
That's I think, the key question. So the first part of your question, I think the spotlight on Pastor Brunson has been a positive thing. It's given traction to religious freedom advocacy efforts in general, but you know, in particular with regard to the Patriarchate. Suddenly, everyone's paying attention to what's happening to religious freedom in Turkey due to the Brunson case. It's been a high-profile case. It's been written about everywhere from the Financial Times to the New York Times, and it's been a highly mediatized case. And as a consequence, that has generated greater discussion about what's happening with religious freedom, including for the Patriot Gate. So that enables advocacy. I think the real question is, in terms of U.S. policy, is if we were to imagine a scenario whereby Pastor Brunson is released tomorrow, and hopefully mm-hmm. he will be released, what would that mean then for U.S. policy vis-a-vis Turkey in general and for these connections between religious freedom and security? Because on the one hand, the positive scenario is that a Brunson release would embolden the U.S. to say, look, you have, you know, it's not only about Pastor Brunson, it's about the Ecumenical Patriarchate, it's about all these other religious communities, and so this is only the first step. And the U.S. would use the same kind of leverage that it has been using to get Pastor Brunson's release to get improvements for the Patriarchate, including but certainly not limited to the reopening of Halki. That's the positive scenario. The negative scenario, which I think would be certainly devastating for the Patriarchate and would be bad for religious freedom conditions and politics in Turkey, and I think would be very, very bad for U.S. interests, would be to get the release of Pastor Brunson and then the U.S. go back to business as usual with Turkey. That would be, I think, a strategic mistake of enormous proportions, because it would signal then to Turkey that there really are no consequences for this kind of hostage diplomacy behavior. And they have practiced it not only vis-a-vis Brunson, but, you know, everywhere from Bosnia to West Africa to Western Europe. So it would signal you can take people hostages, American citizens and your own citizens, and there will be no consequences for you. And it will also signal with regard in particular to the small Christian communities in Turkey that it's open season on Christians. You can detain, do whatever you wish to them while they're imprisoned. And once you release them, there's literally no consequence for you. So I think that's going to be the real test when it comes to, and this goes back to the earlier question about the IRF ministerial, how serious religious freedom policy is developed and implemented under this administration. The Brunson case in many ways will be a real test case.
Got it. So when we talk about the challenges to the Patriarchate, it's natural to look at Turkey's action as the main point of concern. Given the latest reports from AP and others, however, it looks like it's not just Turkey that is threatening the Patriarchate, but also Russia. Can you give us some background on the latest reports detailing a Russian campaign to hack the Patriarchate and its email accounts?
Yeah, and like, why is it occurring?
What does that all mean for the Patriarchate and Greek Americans here?
Right. Well, so I think there's the macro context and then more the, you know, meso or micro context. There was an AP report a couple weeks ago that Fancy Bear, and that's the hacking group that was entangled. Members of that hacking group were indicted under the Mueller investigation here in the U.S. That Fancy Bear had been trying to hack into the email and other electronic accounts of the Ecumenical Patriarchate. So what does that tell us? I mean, it tells us that, number one, the Russian state has its eyes on the FNAR. It tells us, I think it should tell us, number two, what we've already always known, which is that the Turkish state, has its eyes and ears all the time on the FNAR. But I think, you know, it's part of a more global story, and which is that it's not only these two governments. I think all eyes and ears that are concerned with religion and geopolitics in that Eurasian space that goes north-south from, you know, Russia to Turkey are watching the FNAR. And we tend to think, I think, as, you know, Greek Orthodox in America, we tend to think of maybe the FNAR in terms of the specific issues that, you know, you all know so well. But I think we miss the fact that, the FNAR is part of, the FNAR leads the global Orthodox community, and religions are transnational actors, and they are geopolitically important. And in the case of Orthodoxy, the Fancy Bear hacking story underscores that. Because just to go now more to the micro level in the immediate context, mm-hmm. we know that In the last week, the Ecumenical Patriarchate has sent two exarchs to Ukraine to begin a conversation about granting autocephaly to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. That has been a matter of great tension between Constantinople and Moscow. Moscow sees that move as a direct attack on Moscow's on the Patriarchate of Moscow, but more generally on Moscow's pretensions to displace Constantinople as the global voice, the voice of global Orthodoxy. And it's a well-known fact that there are deep ties between the Putin regime, the Russian state on the one hand, and the Patriarchate of Moscow on the other. So it's no surprise then that Fancy Bear, tied to the Putin regime, has been trying to hack into the Fanar's accounts at a time when the discussion about autocephaly for Ukraine as part of the larger effort of Moscow to displace Constantinople has now come to the fore. So this is a story about internal Orthodox, relations, and it's the linkage of those to enormous geopolitical interests and tectonic plates, if that makes sense.
Well, it's not just this one. There was also a case, I know we discussed it earlier, where a couple of years ago there was like a fake news story that had popped up, supposedly written by a U.S. diplomat, linking the Patriarchate to Gulenists right after the coup in Turkey.
And the linkage right. between the Patriarchate being the mastermind, if you may, of the coup.
Right. So that there were two articles actually that appeared on Russian blog sites. One was off. They were both forgeries. I mean, they were both plants. One was supposedly authored by U.S. Ambassador Hughes, and the other was supposedly authored by former U.S. National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski. Both of which pointed a finger at the Ecumenical Patriarch, saying that he was a tool of the American CIA and the Gulenists. So both of those articles were basically designed to discredit the Patriarch in the immediate aftermath of the 2016 coup attempt in Turkey. And they were also, the Hughes letter, I think, is important. The timing of that, not only after the coup attempt, but also in the lead up to the Septembriana events, the events of September 1955, the remembrance time of that, because those articles moved from the Russian blogosphere. They were translated into Turkey and appeared in, the Turkish press that is most loyal to the Erdogan government. And so they incited violence, really, against the Ecumenical Patriarch, the person of the Patriarch and the Patriarchate. And that's what they were intended to do. And for the purposes of this discussion, again, I think what's important here is that it shows that there's a very rich and robust connection between geopolitics, between Russia and Turkey, and ecclesiastical politics between the Patriarchate of Moscow and the Ecumenical Patriarchate. And the Moscow Patriarchate has been very open, with full support by the Putin regime, in its efforts to claim that it is what they call the Third Rome, therefore displacing Byzantium Constantinople, and claiming that because the Ecumenical Patriarchate, the flock inside Turkey is so small, that Patriarchate really should no longer enjoy the primacy of honor, which it has historically enjoyed. So this is a full-on frontal assault by a church-state relationship in Russia vis-a-vis the Patriarchate in Turkey. And unfortunately, inside of Turkey, with a government that is, also committed to the elimination of that Patriarchate.
So there's a lot of stuff for us to monitor then moving forward. And I want to thank you again, Dr. Prodromou, and leave us with one last question from Dean to wrap up.
So HALC has been active on a number of campaigns to safeguard religious freedom, from circulating petitions to preserve the status of Hagia Sophia to demanding the reopening of Halki. What else can we do in the U.S. to improve the situation? And moving forward, what other opportunities do we have for advocacy efforts from membership organizations like HALC?
Dean and Thanos, I want to congratulate both of you and also Hulk more generally under Andy's leadership for the work you're doing. And I think what you're doing hits the kind of three points of successful advocacy: raising awareness, encouraging activism, and producing impact. So, continue to, link those together: awareness, activism, and impact. Because good activism, as you all know, because you live in the trenches of that, is really dependent on sound knowledge and broad awareness. That's the way you're going to continue to, raise broad-based support. And then you'll hopefully, continue to produce impact. I would encourage you on the religious freedom issues, particularly when it comes to the patriarchate. This is a moment of enormous vulnerability, but enormous opportunity. We talked about Pastor Andrew Brunson. I would encourage you to, deliver the message that, Andrew Brunson is a symbol of something that the patriarchate has been suffering, since the establishment of the Turkish state, that Andrew Brunson is, should not be the end of the story, but he should be a kind of clarion call for U.S. foreign policy makers to recognize the broad-based violations of religious freedom in Turkey. So I think that message is really important to deliver to our, not only our elected officials, but especially to the IRF office, the International Religious Freedom Office. And the other thing I would really encourage you all to do, and I know you do this already, but is to really kind of, ramp this up, is to engage again with congressional officials, but also with the decision makers and policymakers where priorities about Turkey are really designed and implemented. And that's in the State Department, but also at the Defense Department. Because ultimately, the nature of U.S.-Turkey relations is a strategic relationship. And so questions about values and religious freedom are ultimately filtered through that lens. So it's important to have interlocutors there to try and explain, and there's ample empirical evidence to show it, how it is that high levels of religious freedom lead to high levels of lead to stable security communities. And where religious freedom is weak, security environments are weak and states fail. And we see the kinds of things, in the neighborhood of Turkey, but also inside Turkey, we're seeing. So all those, keep those, that multi-pronged strategy with those key interlocutors in our government who think about and make decisions when it comes to policy on Turkey.
Thank you again, Dr. Prodromo, for joining us on our Ask Halk segment of The Greek Current. Dean, thank you as well
for
your thoughtful questions and everything. To our listeners, make sure to tune in to our next episode of The Greek Current. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.